I'll explain the title, and then we'll get to work. The title is about En Mukdam Mukhar Torah. Is it too loud? Are we okay? Most of us remember that title, or that answer, when we were studying Chumash in high school. Maybe even earlier. You were studying something, and you had a question. Something didn't make sense. And you asked a question of what's going on. It's out of order. And what answer did the teacher tell you? En Mukdam Mukhar Torah. I call it like a joker card. And which means, stop thinking. Correct? This means it's okay. Commissions have to be in order. Thanks. Alicia. What I want to show you in today's share is Ein Mukdam Mukhar Torah means start thinking instead of stop thinking. When we say the Chumash is not in chronological order, it doesn't mean it's in random order, but rather a primary consideration when Chumash is being put together, which we'll talk about when it was put together, is going to be that the order of Chumash is not necessarily chronological. The first part of the share is I want to try to understand what that means and why. To do that, we have to define two phrases. Some of you were in the previous class, we talked about it. I'm going to use two words for an introduction, and then we'll take it from there. The two words are chronicle, composition. Chronicle, I'm going to use the word chronicle to explain when you write something like a history book or a diary. A chronicler writes a story as it happens. And if I'm reading a history book, it's written like chronicle. If you're a stenographer, you're taking notes. In a meeting, your job is to be a chronicler. What you summarize, how you summarize, you might have a bias. But in general, when you're writing chronicle, your goal is to describe the events as they happen, which we call history. Composition, remember in school when the teacher said, class, we're doing a composition? Exactly. Everyone says that there's two people that everyone hates in the class who are excited, but everyone else, they hate it. Why do they hate it? If they don't even have to write the same word 500 times on the board, you can live with that. But a composition? Why? Because you have to think. The difference is, when someone writes a composition, the goal is to make a point. So in your composition, you can bring tons of proofs from history. But there's a big difference when you're reading something, when you're reading what someone's writing, there's a big difference if the author is writing it as a chronicler or writing a composition. If you want to compare it to when you read a newspaper, there's the news, which is chronicle, and there's the editorial page, which is composition. An editorial, when you're reading an editorial, you're assuming that someone's coming to give you an opinion. And you might be basing his opinion on current events. When you're reading a news story, a good reporter should tell you what happened. There's some newspapers that combine the two together. Not the Jewish ones. where the goal of the news is to form your opinion. I think they call that yellow journalism or something. I want to mention some examples, you don't know. Now, why am I bringing that down? When reading Chumash, most students, when they first read Chumash, and even when they second and third read Chumash, the assumption is they're reading chronicle. This is the story of the Jewish people. Here's what happened. Here's how God created. Here's the life of their forefathers. Here's the story of how we went out of Egypt. Here's the story of how we got in trouble. Here's the story of how we got to Israel. And the same thing continues in the beginning. My contention is, that's not why Chumash is written. Chumash is written for a prophetic reason. Chumash is being written by God, or through God, that's what the Navi is. A Navi is a spokesman of God, coming to give man a message from God, or at least the Jewish people a message from God. And the purpose of that composition, the purpose of what's happening in Chumash, is not to let the reader know what happened, but rather to give a message from God. Many times that message from God is being given over through history, by telling history. But the primary goal, what I call author's intent, is not to let the reader know what happened, but rather to give the reader a message. For example, those who were in the shiur before on Sforno, we talked about in Sefer Bereshit, that Sforno, almost anyone understands, the purpose of Sefer Bereshit is not to let us know how God created, and not to let us know how the forefathers were born and how they grew up, but rather it's a book of how and why God chose a nation, and his relationship with that nation, and the covenant he makes with the nation, and the purpose of that covenant. And in light of that, you understand the reason why we hear about the flood, the reason why we hear about the Tower of Babel, they're all foil and background to appreciate why it wasn't the Catholic Tower of Babel for anybody. And later, the story of Avram is why he was chosen and why Lot was unchosen. And why Shmuel was unchosen and why Yitzhak was chosen. And why Esau was unchosen and Yaakov. And why, despite everything, all 12 tribes are chosen. You can argue why, but it's the story of who's being chosen. When the book is over, we know who the Jewish nation is. In light of that, when you read Sefer Bereshit, it's very different. We'll talk about when Sefer Bereshit was given and why it was written. The same thing in Sefer Shmuel. It's not just what happened, but it's how God fulfilled his covenant in Sefer Bereshit. How that covenant that he promised in Sefer Bereshit was fulfilled. The story of that will be in Sefer Shmuel. And that will continue. In the Nevi'im Rishonim, we can do the same idea. Now, if Chumash was nice and organized, we wouldn't have five books, we'd have two books. What would the two books be? One would be a storybook, which would be the story of how God created, how we chose our forefathers, how we came out of Egypt, how we got the Torah, how we went through the desert, etc., and how we finally made it in, or almost made it in. We call it a narrative of Chumash. What would the other book be? It would be the law book. I'd have one history book, one Shofar book. That would make a lot of sense. What happens instead? We get to Har Sinai. It's a storybook that we get to Har Sinai, pretty much. A couple of laws about Korban Pesach, by the way. We get to Har Sinai, and God calls Moshe to come up. We make a covenant. Am Yisrael agrees to the covenant. We get the first 10 commandments. Then Moshe goes up for 40 days to get the rest of the laws. What should happen at that point, Chumash? We should get a book of all the laws that God gave Moshe later on Har Sinai. Now, I understand why you're not going to get all the laws in one day. It's too much. But we're getting laws in 40 days. The logical order of Chumash would be Moshe should go up to Har Sinai, get the laws, and then Chumash should record all the laws that Moshe Rabbeinu received on Har Sinai and write them down. After he comes down, the rest is going to be stories. What happens instead? We get the story in Sefer Shmuel of how Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to get the laws, but what we don't have is the story of the laws that he received. And that's where things get confusing. What we're going to begin with, and that's going to be our first source, in the end of Parsha Mishpatim, the end of Perach Havdalah. I want to begin with the story of what happens after the Ten Commandments. I'll review what happens up until the Chumash. God chooses a nation, he plants the seeds of a nation, in Sefer Bereshit, with the goal that we call it before cloning. Instead of picking a ready-made nation, he clones a nation. He picks, the father, he picks a certain seed he wants to build it from. He refines it, Abraham, Yitzhak, Jacob, etc. He plants it in the womb in Egypt. And finally, we give birth to a nation. The nation that he wants to represent them is going to be born in Egypt. Then it's going to be given, it's going to be programmed at Har Sinai. And finally, we're going to give it its land. It's going to become that nation in the land of Israel. But on the way, coming out of Egypt, we become a nation. God makes a covenant with that nation. We call that Mamre Har Sinai. Then we get to the question, why is it that we have 613 and they have 7? Why did the Jewish nation get so many laws? Before we get any laws, first we enter a covenant. And that covenant is real simple. I mean, it's complicated, it's a difficult one, but the idea behind it is simple. We come to Har Sinai, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, ask B'nai Yisrael as following. Do you want to be my nation? Im Shemot Yishmu V'kol Yush, Martem Et Briti, V'tem Yisgula V'kol Amin, and prepare Kitet Yishmot, V'tem Tinim Amdach HaKonim V'Bar Kadosh. And we answer, either Nasa Nasa Benishma, that's the classic Mugam Mukhar. Next time we'll bring that as an example. Am Yisrael accepts to be a nation representing God, whatever that entails. But we don't know what those laws are yet. How do we become that nation? We don't know yet. But first we agree to become that nation without giving any details. We joke around it, it's not even a joke. Chazal compared it to a marriage. Because we're accepting a covenant, we're accepting an agreement, and a relationship, and a partnership, without having any idea of what we're getting into. And a general idea, but we don't know what the details are. After we accept the covenant, what happens next? God tells us the first 10. Mamre Har Sinai, with all of the efforts, etc. But that's only 10, that's 603 to go. We're not counting. Then what happens? The people get scared, and they want to hear directly from God, okay? Then we get Parsha Mishpatim. It's a small set of laws. Not 613, more than 10, about 50 some laws we get. Then we make a covenant. And this beautiful Ramban that says, first we accept the covenant initially with a blind acceptance, then we get a sampling of what these laws are about, Parsha Mishpatim, and then we ratify the agreement and say Nasa V'Nishma, and that's a beautiful explanation of the covenant in the beginning of Parsha Yitro, followed by a set of laws, the Ten Commandments of Parsha Mishpatim, and another covenant at the end of Parsha Mishpatim, when B'nai Yisrael say Nasa V'Nishma, and there's a whole ceremony, and they sprinkle the blood, and they have a Kiddush, and the Ramban is in the beginning of Parsha Truma, it's a beauty, where he explains the progression of mitzvot, and then he explains that after we ratify the covenant, then the Mishkan is next because it's a symbol of the covenant. That's why it brings it down there. What's beautiful about Ramban is that Brit Sinai, the covenant, is not an event, it's a process. It's a beautiful process. It begins with coming out of Egypt. We initial the agreement. Beforehand, we get the Ten Commandments, Parsha Mishpatim. After we have an idea of what we're getting into, we have an official agreement, we have a signing on the White House or at Mount Sinai. We make an official ceremony, and then it's official. Now we can make a clubhouse, the Mishkan, and then we can get more laws. And that's what we're going to read now. The covenant is over. It's official. We signed. We bought in. There's no going back. Like we say, it's a Catholic marriage. Really? You've heard that before, no? No, I'm saying it seriously. That's our argument. We hold that Judaism is the Catholic marriage. I mean, there's no possibility of divorce. That doesn't mean nobody's going to get along. But it's irreversible. And they hold it's a Protestant marriage. Isn't that it? That's what the Catholics say. Now, what we're going to read now is what we're going to read. Remember, we can't get out of it, God can't get out of it. Read Parsha Nitzavim. That's what it's pretty much about. God can't break out, we can't break out. Looking at the end of Parsha Mishpatim, which is Perach Avdalah, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Har Sinai. In Pasuk Yud-Bet, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Aleil El Ha'ara VeYasham. Remember, we just finished the covenant of Nasa V'Nishma in the beginning of chapter 24, and now we're finishing Parsha Mishpatim. It's all official. We have the first sounding of laws. Now God has Moshe come up the mountain. Ve'Nalecha Luchot Eben, I'm going to give you. Luchot Eben are the what we call Luchot. What do we call them in the Seder? Who knows too? In Hebrew, Luchot Habrit. The symbol of the covenant. Then, HaTorah, HaTorah BaMitzvah, Shekatati L'Rotam. Why is Moshe going up now for 40 days? To get the rest of the laws. What should Moshe Rabbeinu receive during those 40 days? The rest of Tariyat Mitzvot. Would make sense. Then we have the story Moshe goes up with Yeshua, and he tells him he's going up, and there it says Moshe's there for 40 days and 40 nights. What follows in Chumash? What happens after Parsha Mishpatim? What Parsha do we get? Parsha Truma. If you read Chumash in order, what's it look like? It looks like the first set of laws that Moshe Rabbeinu receives during his first 40 days are the laws of the Mishkan. In fact, what does it seem like from Sefer Shemot? Not only is the first set of laws that he gets, but it's the only law that he gets. If I follow Sefer Shemot in order, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Har Sinai for 40 days. That's the last Pesukim of Parsha Mishpatim. Parsha Truma begins with the laws of the Mishkan. Parsha Truma, Tetzaveh, Hachat Kitisa. Moshe comes down at the end of, in the middle of Kitisa. It's when he breaks the little halt and everything. And in the meantime, what does God call him? The laws of the Mishkan. Then we have Chet Egel, the whole story up and down, and we finally get that relationship fixed up with God attributes of mercy. But if I look only at Sefer Shemot, it looks like the only laws that Moshe gets for those 40 days is the Mishkan. What did Chazal say? What did the rabbi say? What laws did Moshe get on the first 40 days? If you're Rashi, what laws did he get? You should know what point of Rashi? He gets everything except what? Except the Mishkan. But Rashi says the most amazing thing. And he's following Chazal. Says, what really happened? When Moshe goes up for 40 days, he gets all the laws of the Torah except the Mishkan. Everything except the Mishkan. And after Chet Ha'Egel, on the second 40 days, he gets the Mishkan. What does Chumash record? The only thing Chumash records are the laws of the Mishkan. And what doesn't record? All the other laws. We save them for later. So, I guess how Rashi explains that, what's he say? Im Dam Ochar Torah. But that doesn't mean there's no reason for that. There's a beautiful reason for that, which we won't have time to go into it if we have time later on. But what Rashi is assuming, what Chazal is assuming, are when I'm reading Chumash, don't expect it to be in chronological order. We have to understand why, though. There's going to be a reason for it. In the meantime, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up and asks for forgiveness. God says, okay, yes, no. Finally, we're going to renegotiate the covenant, the contract, and we get now Binota Rachamim. You know that story. Moshe goes up, he broke the first ones and makes two new luchot. What should happen when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down with the second luchot? In the meantime, the second set of 40 days, third set of 40 days, he gets the second luchot, and he gets the loss of the Mishkan. What should happen now when he comes down from Har Sinai? What should Moshe do? He should teach the laws. Now we explain the Mishkan, also teach the laws. Does Chumash talk about that? Sure does. Take a look at it. The end of Parsha Kitisa, that's the next source. It's not Teret Mamadala, we call it the Michelangelo of the King. You heard of him? Not the Ninja Turtle, the sculptor guy, the famous one. You'll see why. Yeah, Pasuk HaTet, we'll read slowly. I'm going to read it fast. Vayibarek Moshe Mehar Sinai. This is at the end of Parsha Kitisa. That's the Luchot, the Midot Rachamim are all concluded, it's all set. Moshe has the second Luchot. Moshe is coming down from Har Sinai. Ushnei Luchot Ayyub Yad Moshe, Riyutom in Ahar. Moshe lo yidak yikran or panah bedabroito. Famous, Moshe didn't know that his face either had horns or was shining. Now you might see what the mistake was based on. It's not just the word care. Vayara Arun Luchot Ayyub Moshe, Yimei Kran or panah, Vayirum Yeshe Bilal. They were afraid of him. Why? It says they were afraid of Moshe. So what could be one reason why they were afraid of him? Because they had more. But that's not the right interpretation of that. That could be what led the translators to make that mistake. You know what mistake I'm talking about? The famous one of, they translated this with horns, and that's how Moses has, and later Jews, and that's why we cover them with the kippah. Yeah. Now, something beautiful happens there. Why are the people afraid of Moshe? For the same reason they were afraid of God. At Har Sinai, they were afraid of God. Now Moshe's replaced God, pretty much not replaced him, but representing God, and now they're afraid of him. Who's going to break the ice? Moshe Rabbeinu is the teacher. What's he do? Same thing that God did for him. Remember Parsha Vayikra? God calls Moshe? No. Vayikra Ale Moshe. Moshe calls on the people, he breaks the ice. Yeshua Elam Aron Chon Nisim Beida Vayyaber Moshe Aleim. Pasuk Aleim. What happens? Moshe comes down, he breaks the ice. The people finally come and talk to him. And what does Moshe tell the people? Everything that God commanded him on Har Sinai. Which means, everything that God commanded him on Har Sinai. Why shouldn't he? Now, I don't know how many days that took. What does Chumash continue to talk about, if you know after? When Moshe talked to them, or infinity, put in the middle of the whole thing with a mask, sort of pouring on. Remember, he puts on a mask, takes off a mask. It's a little complicated. But we have the story of how Moshe Rabbeinu taught the laws to Bnei Israel, back and forth. He's got a lot of laws to teach. He also teaches them the laws of the Mishkan. And the only thing that Sefer Shmuel talks about afterwards is how Moshe gathers the people to collect money. We are Jewish, in fact, then. The first thing we collect, we have a gathering to collect money. We have a building committee. You divide up the job. That's Parsha Vayakov Kudet. And we build a Mishkan, put it together. And the only thing that Sefer Shmuel talks about is going to be the symbol of Mamad Har Sinai, you understand? The focus of Sefer Shmuel will be the symbol of Mamad Har Sinai. But what more to talk about? The laws we got on Har Sinai. We initially don't pay attention to that. But the laws Moshe Rabbeinu received on the first 40 days, and possibly other than the Mishkan, things from the second 40 days, we don't hear about Mishnah. The only thing we hear about Mishnah after Moshe goes up to Har Sinai are the laws that have to do with the Mishkan. Or there's a couple laws in Kitisa, which is a repeat, if you sort of summarize it. All the Ben Adam and Makom laws that were in Parsha Mishpatim have to be repeated again after Chet Ha'Egel in Parsha Kitisa. That's why we have Shalosh Megadim again. That's a separate chip. Now, where are the laws that Moshe Rabbeinu received in Har Sinai? Anyone know? But we have to look for where are we going to find about the laws that Moshe Rabbeinu received in Har Sinai? They're not in Shmot. Shmot never tells us about them. So what are they going to be? Are they Vayikra? Yeah. In Parsha Vayikra, they have them? But Parsha Vayikra was given to Moshe where? In the Olam Moed. But there are some laws of Ikra. Like what? Give me an example of laws of Ikra that were given to Moshe on Har Sinai. Or who's bending next to him? Parshat Bahar. Bahar for sure. If you paid attention last week, or yesterday, Parshat Tzavah, in the end of Parashat Zayin, the laws of Tzav, Parshat Tzavah, sorry. Tzav, it's Zot HaTorah Lo'olah, Yitav HaTav HaShem Le'Yudim, Asher Tziva Asher Et Moshe, Bar Sinai, Yom Tzavatol, Akrim, Ben Mi Bar Sinai. Rabban disagrees a little bit, but it seems like those laws, at least Rabban agrees to some of them, those laws were given on Har Sinai. Goshim Kiyu didn't say, but there's a good reason to think it was given in Har Sinai, Parshat Bahar for sure. But that's not all the laws. There's another book that we never read, because it's on vacation. Right, that book's called? Yeah. In college they call it D, but we call it Sefer Dvarim. Remember? Yeah. And in my opinion, that's the answer to all the Bible critic stuff. But they don't have is that the book of Dvarim are the laws that we got in Parshat Mishpatim. By the time I would prove it, those were in why you would show we did the on Shabbos we did that share. That would take a whole couple hours. But the laws in Sefer Dvarim are when Moshe Rabbeinu has this very long speech in Sefer Dvarim. In Sefer Dvarim, in Parakeh, Moshe Rabbeinu gathers the people together a month before he dies and tells them, listen everybody, I want to teach you all the laws that God told me. And now we're going to Israel, I have to teach you one last time. He begins his speech saying these laws are part of the covenant. That's Parakeh. And then he tells them that the reason I'm teaching you these laws is because when God first taught you these laws directly, panim b'fanim, you got all scared. And you begged me. And what did you beg me? We don't want to go to Shepal anymore. We don't want to hear it from God anymore. It's too intense. You go, give us your notebook. And God says, great idea. And therefore, God calls Moshe for 40 days and 40 nights, teaches Moshe the laws, and Moshe now teaches these laws to Bnei Yisrael on behalf of God. That's why in Parakeh and Devarim, in the Tanakh, we have the story of the Ten Commandments again. They're not a repeat of the Ten Commandments, but rather, they're the introduction to the laws of Sefer Torah. But if you read Parakeh and Devarim, which you should try one time, it's real easy, easy Hebrew. Don't even need to try, it's like black on white. There is the exact story that we're missing in Sefer Shmot, Mishpatim, is right there in Parakeh and Devarim. Rabban even brings it down in Shmot. It says, the laws that Moshe Rabbeinu receives in Sefer Devarim were first given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai the first 40 days. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu taught these laws to Bnei Israel when he came down from Har Sinai after the second set of 40 days. Chumash doesn't record them in Sefer Shmot for a good reason, because the laws of Sefer Devarim require constant repetition. You talk about it every day in Shema. Believe it or not, that's the psukim we say every day are the introduction to the laws of Sefer Dvarim. And Moshe says that the laws that I got on Har Sinai that begin with Vahatat Hashem Elokecha, Vahatat Hashem, those laws require constant repetition. And therefore Moshe taught those laws when he came down from Har Sinai. He taught them again on the 11th day journey to the land of Israel before the Chassid of the spies. He taught them in the Midbar, in the Arabah, Musuf. He taught them over and over again. And now in the 40th year, he's teaching them one last time. That's the opening line of Sefer Torah, explained according to Ebenezer in Ramah. And Chumash. You read Parakeh carefully. Now, before he gives that speech, he has an intro speech, why it's been 40 years. That's why he repeats the story of the spies. He doesn't repeat the story. He spins the story of the spies to make it meaningful to the new generation. But the goal of Sefer Torah, Moshe is saying, these are the laws I got on Har Sinai, I have taught them to you before, I'm going to teach them to you one last time. And I finish teaching to you, when you get to Israel, you're going to write them in stone. It's Parshat Kitov. In stone. And guess what Yeshua does? And we're going to make a covenant again, even though it's been 40 years. And we're going to sing it, and we're going to have a warning, Tochacha. And we're going to sing about them later on. But those are the laws, and every 7 years we're going to read them again. It's called Hakka. But Sefer Dvarim are the laws that we received 40 years back. Moshe teaches them one last time in Sefer Dvarim. What does Chumash decide to do? Instead of recording them when they were first given to Moshe Rabbeinu, Chumash prefers to record them for posterity. When? The last time he teaches them, for a very good reason. Moshe Rabbeinu has been teaching these laws over and over and over again. Mishneh Torah. It's a law that needs constant repetition. The reader of Chumash never heard them yet. The people of Israel heard it over and over again. Chumash refers to recording the last Tetrachot for two beautiful reasons. One is, the last time is always going to be better. He's polished already. On top of that, when Moshe teaches the laws like any good teacher, he doesn't just teach laws, he also explains things, but also he gives rebuke. And what does he give rebuke? Half of his speech is they call shtucks in modern English. But you read the Chanan and Nechem, what does he give it to him? You guys are bad, you've been bad since then, remember this, remember that, remember what guy did to Miriam. He throws in a lot of one-liners, speeches even, many speeches, reminding the people. So the rebuke may be new, the laws are 40 years old. And they reflect the idea that was before all the sins. And that explains why Sefer Dvarim doesn't talk about Mishkan. Is that a problem in the university world? But Dvarim doesn't talk about Mishkan for a good reason. Because had it not been for Chet Egel, there wouldn't be a need for a temporary Mishkan. We would have gone right to Israel. What does Sefer Dvarim talk about? It talks about a permanent temple. HaMakom HaShivchar Hashem. And therefore, when Moshe's last speech, we're not going to talk about that. We're talking about the ideal. And therefore, he only talks about what the laws he got for the first 40 days. Now, that's one example of how Chumash, even though the laws were all given in Har Sinai, some of them are going to be in Sefer Vayikra for thematic reasons. Some are going to be in Sefer Dvarim. We'll see which ones later for thematic reasons. Some will be in Bamidbar, even though they were all given in Har Sinai. Now, it could be that once the Mishkan was built, maybe you got some more. It could be certain things happened on the way in the desert. Like after the Moravian, maybe then we got the laws of Tzitzis, maybe. Maybe it's narrow, maybe just, we'll talk about that soon. It could be that there was this women's group. What were they called? They had five of them. So they came up with this idea, and the rabbis listened to them. It was amazing. And they were Machadish Halach over them. It was amazing. They wouldn't get by nowadays. Back then, it worked back then. Now, with that initial law, did a lot change because we got involved in such a great topic from Akshava? It's such a deep one. Do laws, are there certain, Pesach changed. Was that God's original intention? Or do we only get the laws because we were begging for it? Or we asked for it? That's such a great makloket. We're not gonna, just to appreciate the makloket, it's so beautiful. Did these laws come because people complained and got involved? Or was that the original intention? That's a whole deep understanding of how Torah works become. You know, how static and how dynamic is Torah, and how powerful Torah Shabbat is. Again, that's a topic for a whole different yomim. Now we're going to read a beautiful chizkunin, which explains, I think it explains everything I just talked about, but it says it nice and simple. Chizkunin is going to explain how Chumash came about. Now ask almost anybody, when did we get to Torah? Most people think that where do we get Chumash like we have today? In Har Sinai. It doesn't say that anywhere in Chumash. It says exactly the opposite. And Chazal said the opposite. We get the Torah in its form that we have today at the 40th year, in Parshat Vayera. And it comes with the song, Shira Tazino. It's black and white in Chumash. Again, it's the end of Torah and we don't read it. Chumash was in its final form was given to us in the 40th year. The laws were given earlier. We got lots of laws, and every law was studied and taught. But the organization of those laws and the presentation of those stories is written down in the 40th year. Moshe does it before he dies. We'll talk about it very soon. And when Moshe, even though he got these laws over 40 years before then, and he's taught them over and over again, God tells Moshe to publish Chumash in the 40th year. Now, when it comes time to publish Chumash, we're going to see what happens. And that's going to explain the Nukdam of the Torah. So, instead of me explaining, I want Chizkunin to explain. It's based on the Gemara in the second Megillah, the Sabbath Hamar Aleph, the Machoket Megillah Nidna, or the Sefer Hatumah Nidna, that it fits into either one. The Chizkunin on the page I gave you, I'll read quickly again, or slowly. He's commenting on Pasuk Lamed Bet. Again, Pasuk Lamed Bet, by Tzadeh Mekosh, Yerim Be'er Shem Yitov, Har Sinai. Moshe commanded the people everything they got taught on Har Sinai. This is what he says. At Kol Asher Dibar Hashem Itov Har Sinai, Dibor HaMachir. First, Chizkunin is going to make his statement. I'll explain the statement, and then he'll give his commentary. He's going to make his statement, a very bold one. He's going to say that all the laws that the Israel theoretically would need to become this nation in the land of Israel should have been given to the Jewish people before they left Har Sinai. Now, how long do we wait? How long does Amisrael Har Sinai for? Anyone know how long? You don't know how long we're in Har Sinai for? Those who know don't say. you know the answer, you don't realize you know the answer. When did we get there? In what month did we get there? In Rosh Chodesh Sivan. 6 weeks after we left Egypt. Then what happens? Up the day down, 3 6 days, we make the covenant. What day in Sivan we get the Torah, the 6th or the 7th? Okay, Machloket. Moshe goes up for 40 days, should come down, and we should go to Israel. What happens instead? They say, what day did he come down? In Zayin Tammuz. 40 days down. He goes up for the third time. On what day? Rosh Chodesh Elul goes up, comes down 40 days later. He's definitely Yom Kippur. That's why Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur. And once he came down, it's Bidot Rachamim. It's not by chance. In fact, because I went backwards, the reason we know that the Torah was given on the 7th of Nisan, 7th of Sivan, or 6th or 7th, if we were backwards from Yom Kippur. It's not the other way around. That just so happens. We were backwards from Yom Kippur, and that's how we get to the with the month. It's got to be 6 or 7 of Sivan. He comes down on Yom Kippur. He gathers the people together and gives them the laws of the Mishkan. Right? That's why we built. What did we do on the Yom Kippur? We built our own Yom Mishkan, don't we? Don't that have a lot of fun? You know that they even built the Sukkah right afterwards. It's not just to start with another mitzvah. It's Parshat Vayakel right after Yom Kippur. Moshe comes down with the second luchol and they built the Mishkan. That's the first mitzvah. Now, we built the Mishkan, but when, we just read 2 weeks ago, when did we put the Mishkan together? On the first of Nisan. We've been building it for 6 months. They wait for the spring, and they put it together, and they take a special day for the dedication. We build the Mishkan. What should we do when the Mishkan is built? There's no goal living in the desert, is there? Where should we be going? Tinek wasn't built yet. where should we be going to? Right? They're supposed to go to Israel, shouldn't they? Why don't they go right away to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, now the Mishkan is built? There's a Kiddush. No, I heard a joke, I mean, from a thing. There's two reasons why people come to shul. Is it? For Kaddish and for Kiddush. That's the only thing you can remember from the whole there's a Kiddush. How long is that Kiddush for? You know what I'm talking about? No. That was beforehand. The Fleisha Kiddush. For everybody. Do you know that hard? The 12th, remember the 12th Nisim? What Korban do they bring every day? Yes? Well, it's Zedach HaShonim. That's Fleishes. That's a Kiddush. Bakar Shnei, Yidim Chamisha, Yidim Chamisha. That's lots of meat. And it's a 12-day Kiddush. So we can't leave. There's a Kiddush going. We're not going to leave Hasina yet. Why don't we leave the 13th of Nisan when the Kiddush is over? All the women know. Why can't we leave the 13th of Nisan? The Dead Sea Hotels weren't built yet. So you have to make Pesach. What day is that? That's roughly the 14th, 15th. Yeah. Why don't we go right after Pesach is over? There's some troublemakers. Not troublemakers. There's people who complain. What do they complain about? Some people were returning. And what do they say? It's not fair. Everyone brought Pesach. We can't bring Pesach. What would the holy God would say? God, it's okay. Bring it out. They got themselves in the bed, didn't they? What did God say? Wait a month. Didn't he? And therefore we wait till when? To Pesach Sheni. When did we finally leave Har Sinai? 3 days later. On what day? On the 20th of Iyar we leave Har Sinai. You know where we know that from? How do we know that we left Har Sinai on the 20th of Iyar? You know what it's based on? It's based on a language called Hebrew. And it's a pasuk in Sefer Bamidbar. It's a Parsha Balota. It's in Parakeh. It says, in Parakeh, it says, on the 20th day of Iyar, the Anan went up and they traveled. And Rashi doesn't bring it down. Yeah. If Rashi brought it down, we don't know it. It would be on the test, etc. It's a pasuk. No one. Understand? So we arrive in Rosh Chodesh Sivan and we leave on the 20th of Iyar. How many days is that? A year less 11 days. Which is so neat because Sefer Dvarim begins with Ahara Sele Chalei. It's like, those are years, that's just cute. Maybe more than that. But we're based in Har Sinai for a year. And that's the reason why a year in Israel is enough, and that's the anti-Tweepers in Israel. But again, but you need 3 years because your year is only a half year anyhow, because there's a camp and all the other stuff, so you still need 3 years. Now, back to Chumash. Okay? His Quran is going to say that during that year of Sinai, we shouldn't receive all the laws we need to become a nation in the land of Israel. Why should that? Because the next step should be the land of Israel. We weren't supposed to sit in the desert. But all the laws should be given them. And that's what he's going to explain. That will be read inside. At Kol Asher Dibar Hashem Etov Bar Sinai, he's going to make a statement. Kol HaMitzvot Shenemru B'Arba'im Yom HaRishonim. All the commandments of Moshe Rabbeinu received during the first 40 days. U'B'Arba'im HaAchronim. And the second 40. He didn't go into what he got when. All the commandments, first 40 days, second 40, and the third 40 days. V'Kol HaMitzvot Shistavu Yisrael. And any, all the commandments of Bnei Yisrael received. Nemru Minisan Shabayitim Yisrael HaMitzvayim. The first laws we got was from Rosh Chodesh Nisan when we left Egypt. Parshat. What is that? Parshat HaKodesh, the laws of Korban Pesach, and HaKodesh Zelachem. An Esrim B'Yar B'Shana Sheni. I did that whole routine just to get that mind. To the 20th of Iyar, in the second year. Meaning, we're spending a year in Har Sinai. Chizkuni is making a bold statement. During that year, all the laws that we need to become a nation should be given at that time. Then he says as follows. Avol HaTorah Megillah Nitna. When Moshe Rabbeinu received these laws, how did he get them? He didn't give them like how? He didn't give them in a Sefer Torah. He got them in Megillah, right? Little Megillah, like big mezuzahs. Every time he got a law, he wrote it down and kept the copy. And then he taught from that. He taught it. Copied it. And now he explains how. שלפי שהיה משה שומע מצוות בידי הקדוש ברוך הוא, היה כותב כל אחד מהכתב עצמו. Every single law that he received, he would write in a separate Megillah. And therefore, for 40 years, he had this big library. Yeshua probably helped him out. And he had the copy, all the laws that he received in Har Sinai, and maybe all the stories, everything that was worth writing down, he wrote down in Megillah. It's 40 years later now, it's time to pass on. And what does he have? Lots and lots of things. We have a whole library of Megillot. But we don't have Chumash yet. Right? Now what happens? It's time to die. Chizkuni says something amazing here. Ukshabam tatem yonam. It came time for Moshe to die. Sidir sefer Torah v'kabab al parashiyot al ayam hazeh v'fi yesh mubin al rimen v'kosh v'shu al otim. I'll explain in a second, by like a little manga. What does God tell Moshe Rabbeinu to do? A month before he dies? He tells him, publish and perish. You get the line. Understand? Publish and perish. It's time to die. Before you die, put it all together. Publish something. Yeah. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is now mandated by God to take all the mitzvot that God gave him and put them together. But based on what order is he going to put them together? If he was a Yankee, what would he do? Or a librarian, what would he do? He'd look at the date stamp on each one and put them in chronological order. Right? If he was the Rambam, what would he do? How would he organize them? Categories, right? You follow? If he was, you can, there's a lot of logical ways you could put them together. And you could put all the stories together in one book, all the laws together in different books. There's lots of ways to categorize it. But that's not what Moshe Rabbeinu does. And that's not what God, now, who does this? Moshe Rabbeinu or HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I call it HaKadosh Baruch Moshe Rabbeinu Incorporated. It's not clear from the Chizkuni. It doesn't make a difference. You know, it's important. But it seems to be that what Moshe does is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it doesn't make, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu, like, they're a team. And through Moshe Rabbeinu, God gives us the Torah. How it happened is an important question, but it's technical. It doesn't change the authority of any of the laws. But God gives Moshe Rabbeinu the publish. And he tells him how to publish it. Now, based on what criteria that Kadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu publish the laws, what's he say? Ukshabav lebnei olam, Sider sefer Torah b'kavah parshiyot. That's not parshat Shavuot, but parshiyot p'tuchot m'stumot. Ad ayom hazeh, lefi hasmuchin harulim k'mo shebishu rabotein. Based on what criteria does he put them together? Exactly. Based on thematic order. Meaning. And that's the key to understanding Chumash. The reader's assumption is that when Moshe Rabbeinu is mandated by Kadosh Baruch Hu to put together the Torah in its final form, instead of putting it into two books or one book, he divides it into five books. And each book has a theme. And Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him to put it in this order, that order, that order. But based on what logic he's putting it together, It's pre-coded. And purposely, we're going to put things out of chronological order, and some things even out of logical order. For what goal and what reason? So that when we see that, we're supposed to ask the question, how come this is here, how come this is there, how come this is there? But what Chumash wants us to do? And Chumash wants us to notice the irregularities in the presentation, because there's a reason for them. And what can we learn from them? All can we learn from them. We call that smichut parshiyot, or smichut, or juxtaposition. Meaning, when Chumash is out of order, it's on purpose. And that's, and Chazal understand it that way. Chazal understand that Chumash is pre-coded. Not with halacha, it's pre-coded with halacha messages, it's pre-coded with machshava messages. It's tremendously, it's a matrix. Because it can be, and there's not one reason for every juxtaposition, there's multiple reasons. And when you study Chumash, you don't only, when you study Shulchan Aruch, you study one halacha at a time. How come the laws of Pesach are followed by the laws of Shavuos? It makes sense. How come the laws of Shabbos are followed by the laws of Shema followed by Shabbos? It makes sense. But in Chumash, I have laws of Eben Shema B'Tzedek Yalach right next door to Amalek. What's the connection? It's a beautiful connection. But it doesn't look like it. It looks like it makes no sense. You have laws of Tzarak all of a sudden next to the laws of it's this, we jump from, if you look at the Dvarim or Mishpatim, we just jump back and forth. It's not poor editing. It's tremendous. And therefore, when you study Chumash, you don't only learn from its content, you learn from its structure as well. And therefore, Chumash wants you to notice Chumash and it's out of order. And all the parts you expect it to be out of order. And what's your job to do when you study, not maybe yours, but what's Chazal's job when you study, is to decode. Now, how do you decode, and who has the license to decode? We've been arguing about that for ages. I'll give you an example. Rabbi Shmuel has 13 principles. How many? How many principles? Last count? 13. Of how to decode for halachic interpretation, doesn't it? Now, who has the authority to do that? We don't, for sure. But the rabbis did, the chazal did. But those we don't means assume the chumash is pre-coded. And that's why the rabbis laws. Every darshan will tell you, every rabbi does that, every darshan does that. That there's meaning. What? Why is Parsha Korach next to Parsha Tzitzit? Why is Miriam's death next to Paraduma? We learn from all that. And Chumash wants there to be drashot. I call this the Pshat Drash. Understand? That's how we did it today. This is the reason. There's a logical reason why Chumash wants to become drashot. And there's not one correct drash and no wrong one. It's a matrix. And there's intentional ambiguity in a lot of psukim and a lot of juxtapositions. And they can be interpreted in multiple ways. And for some generations they mean one thing, and others, and it's Chazal's job to interpret it. The thing what I call Pshuto Shel Torah, not only Pshuto Shel Mikra. There's a theme in Chumash. And when they come to explain it, they don't only have to explain the Pasuk, but that Pasuk has to fit in the rubric of what Chumash is about a nation representing God, to be a model nation. And therefore when something looks strange and weird, Chazal will interpret it based on the theme of Chumash, and not necessarily the Pshat of the simple Pasuk. That happens over and over again, and there's nothing wrong with that. Then the question is, why does it appear to be a little bit different? And when Chumash repeats his Ten Commandments in two different books, and purposely changes the Horn Shamar, and the reason for Shabbat, that's not poor copying. That's intentional. And he wants to read ask him what's going on. Not just to make up a nice song for Kabbalah Shabbat, but there's a message between Zahar and Shamar. What that message is, you can argue. But all the apparent contradictions, they're not intentional. That's Rav Breuer's probably biggest kiddush. If you know Rav Breuer, that's his big fight with the Bible critics, is that when you study Chumash, there's tons of contradictions. Things are way out of place. His claim is it's not multiple authors and someone pasting it all together. It's done on purpose by HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Rabbeinu Incorporated in order to learn from those differences. There's a reason why there's two stories of creation. You learn from the contradictions between them. And there's a reason why he wrote it repeated twice and why they're different each time. And there's a reason why there's tiny little... I learned from the contrast. And that's Chazal's approach to study. And that's behind the whole idea of Parshanut. And therefore, when you're studying something like the story of the Mishkan, and all of a sudden the rabbis can tell you, guess what? It didn't happen then, it happened 40 days later. It happened 80 days later with the second Luchot. Where they coming from? It doesn't make sense. When you understand what the Chizkuni is saying, it makes perfect sense. Chumash purposely puts it out of order in order to teach you lessons. Now, what that lesson is, that's a whole shiur about Truma Tetzaveh. But there, the idea is, in a nutshell, is that there's two. There's a need for a permanent house to represent God. To represent, I need the temple to perpetuate and remember Mamad Har Sinai. That's important. Even if it had not been for the sin of Chet Egel, I would have needed a temple. But if it had not been for the sin of Chet Egel, we would have gone to Israel right away. We wouldn't need a temporary one. Because of the sin of the golden calf, now I can't leave Har Sinai until I do some rehab. And now we need a temporary temple. And therefore the laws of the Mishkan are going to be given, the need for a temporary temple, we call Mishkan, is because of Chet Egel. The need for a temple is because to perpetuate Mamad Har Sinai. Got it? And to make sure that I understand that the Mishkan is not only because of Chet Egel. If Chumash would be in order, and Chet Egel would be, and the Mishkan would be recorded after Chet Egel, I would think the only reason for Mishkan is because of Chet Egel. I wouldn't realize that I need the Mishkan to perpetuate Mamad Har Sinai. So what do? We take the laws we're given 40 days later, and I juxtapose them to the whole story of Mamad Har Sinai and the covenant, to highlight the connection between the Mishkan and the covenant at Har Sinai. That's the Ramban's beautiful explanation. Even though the specific Mishkan itself, the temporary temple, those details are actually given later. But I put it out of order to teach me something. I have a story about, like I said, the Mishma. According to Rashi, even though it happened earlier, I put it later for thematic reasons. There's a whole bunch of reasons. Now, each book has its thing. And therefore, some of the laws, I'm trying to go over in the last 2 minutes, what's in each book? Sefer Shmuel doesn't tell me the laws, does it? But it focuses on one major topic, which is the most important topic, the relationship between God and His people. The courtship coming out of Egypt, topping the question in Har Sinai, right? The covenant, right? Is the thing. The Ten Commandments are the Luchot HaBrit, or the beginning of the covenant, but they're part and parcel of the covenant. The laws of Parsha Mishpatim, or what we say Ma'aseh B'Mishpatu, they're a sampling of the laws that are part of the covenant, the official covenant, made in the Parsha Mishpatim. And then I need a symbol of that covenant called the Mishkan. And then that whole relationship that we finally solidified in Har Sinai is in crisis. What story is that? Chet Egel. I can resolve that crisis with God's change of attributes and renegotiating the contract. And the symbol that renegotiated contract is working, which means building the Mishkan, and ending with God's Shekhinah returning, and therefore our relationship becomes back together again. And that explains what's in Sefer Shmuel. The laws themselves, you got 3 more books for that. Now that God's presence is in our midst, now that we have this covenant, and God's living with us in our midst, that's going to change how we live. The example I'd like to give is, let's say you're living in a regular, normal home. And somebody grabbed from Bnei Brak, somebody Rosh Yeshiva, who's your second cousin or something, is coming to the States for the summer, or something, and he's staying with you in your house. He's staying with you for a month. What's going to happen to your house? What's going to happen? How people dress in the house will be a little bit different. How people talk. How clean the house is. How people dress. No. But that's how I explain Sefer Vayikra. Not with Yusha. If God's presence is there, if you're a nation representing God, and God's in your midst, can you visit Him? Well, you can visit. You just can't walk right in. There's Tumah and Tahara. You have to be prepared. What do you bring to say hi? Korbanot. What do you do if you made a little mistake? Unintentionally did something wrong. How do you say I'm sorry? Korban, never Korban Ola, Korban Nedava, Korban Toba. How do you act because you're representing God? Kedushin to you. When do we visit on a regular basis? Moadei Hashem, Moadei means a time to meet. Now the life is special. We have lots of Shemitah, Yovel, Kedushat Haaretz. Again, I oversimplified it. But it's all about Kedusha. But it's because God's in our midst, that's the result of it. How about the basics? How do I become a nation representing God? What type of government do I have? What type of economic system? What type of social law? How about social justice? How do I go to war? How do I celebrate my holidays? Where do I celebrate my holidays? What's going to be my hub? What's going to be my attitude? That's the laws of Sefer Devarim. Devarim will be the core laws that make us a nation representing God. Not just as individuals, but more so as a nation. They're like laws of a court system, Shoftim Shoftim, the laws of a political system, how a king has to act or a political leader has to act, how we go to war, when we do go, when we don't go to war, what we do when there's someone dies, we don't know who's responsible. Think about Rufa.
We come to the
language. Yes. We come to that. But those who practice their day laws, as opposed to laws of, as opposed to laws of Kedusha, but we have had a sermon in the Mishkan. I oversimplified it, but each book has its thing. And from dividing the laws into different things, now the last thing I'm going to show you on the back page, we're not going to do it, it's something you can take home. Look on the page, on the flip side. The best example of this is the book of Bamidbar. And this chart simply spills the beans. Because when you go to Sefer Bamidbar, you're going to find, we're going to have in about 3-4 minutes, and show's over. I'm taking the 5 minutes we started later. Can you take 5 minutes? No? Okay. In Sefer Bamidbar, we have a beautiful blend between narrative and commandments. That equals all commandments. Basically, like all narrative. But in Bamidbar, it's primarily a narrative. It's a story of. That's right, on the left. On the left column, if I divided the book between narrative and laws. It's a narrative of first of getting ready to leave Har Sinai. It takes us the first 10 chapters up until like, how we get ready, getting the army ready, getting the Mahaneh ready. The whole travel thing. When we're ready, we leave our city, we should be going to Israel. The middle section explains why we didn't make it and who doesn't make it. It's what went wrong, why we don't make it. After all the sins over and everyone who died dies, we get to 40th year and we get ready to go in again, and that's the last section of the narrative. And you can look at it later on, you figure out it divides beautifully into three sections. That's why strip the book of all its laws with the Torah. As that story is being told, we interrupt that story with laws from Har Sinai. Understand? What Sefer Bamidbar intentionally does, it interrupts a natural flow of story. If I only had the left column, the book would make perfect sense. It would flow beautifully. I take laws that really belong to Sefer Vayikra. If you look at them, you'll see why. They all belong to Vayikra. And I intersperse them in the middle of the narrative, the commercials. For what reason? And they were all given earlier. They have to be given earlier. Some are even recorded earlier in different forms. But most of them had to be given earlier. But what do I do with it when Moshe Rabbeinu writes down Sefer Bamidbar? God tells him to interrupt the narrative with special laws. What are we going to do with those interruptions? What question are we going to ask? Why is this law interrupting this narrative? Why is this law? Why does it sit here after Ketan Raglin? Or before the story of Korah? Why the laws of the Sachim, which come from the produce of the land, from the wheat of the land, the growth land right next to the story of the Raglin, where we decided we don't want the land. I don't know why they would put them together. Okay. You would, there's a thing there. Why the law of Shigate, that would be there. There's lots of laws that really belong there, but for very beautiful thematic reasons, we juxtapose them. Not only can we learn from that, that's pretty much life, isn't it? Because our life is a narrative, but what happens in our own lives? This blend, it's all through Chumash. There's a beautiful blend between narrative and halachot. But it's a little schmaltzy, a little shalashuvis even. That's why I meant it with something I like. In Torah, in keeping Torah, our day-to-day lives is our narrative. And as we live our day-to-day lives, we keep mitzvot. This interspersion between mitzvah in the middle of a book is pretty much what we do. We live our lives in the middle of the day. We have this mitzvah, that mitzvah, that mitzvah. What we have to try to do all the time is find a connection between the mitzvot we're keeping and the lives that we're living. There's not always one reason. There's lots of reasons. We have to be creative. That we think, you have to think. You get it. It's schmaltzy, but I think there's something to it. I call it Shatav Rosh. The way Chumash, it's not just doing it to make things complicated. It's a way of life. This Eim Mutam Mukhar makes sense even. It's not random. It's not stop thinking, it's start thinking. That was my opening point. But when we study Chumash, you pay attention to the structure, not only to meaning. And you have to assume that it might be out of order. It should be out of order. But it's out of order for a reason. Now, are you allowed to come up with a reason on your own? You can only take a reason that someone a couple hundred years ago thought of. You can argue about that from today to tomorrow. But at least to appreciate the reasons that people hundreds of years ago thought of, you have to at least appreciate what the problem is. You have to play the game to appreciate the commentary. What Chazal was saying. So that's the, I hope I fit to the title. In fact, what the concept that Eim Mutam Mukhar Torah is basic to the very understanding of how Chumash was given. And when Chumash is given, it's given intentionally that way. And that doesn't solve every single problem of Bible critics, but it begins to show you that there's an approach that helps answer it. So thank you, I think, on behalf of BYU, thank you everyone for coming. And hope we can have these again in the future. So we're going to have this in a couple minutes. And what is, how do you wish to have Pesach? 30 before Pesach? You can say, Chag Esher Besameach.
Yeah.
Out?
Oh.
Are there? There's lots of them.
One, it seems to be like a one, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful.
Yeah.
That is the reason for the temporary one doesn't come.